Hey everyone, this is Josh from Solopreneur Grind, and I am here with Roman Prokopchuk, founder of Nova Zora Digital and the host of the Digital Savage Experience podcast. Roman, really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me today.
Awesome, Roman. So a lot of stuff to cover just from that intro alone. There's, you know, digital marketing agency, podcast host. We have a lot in common. I think it's going to be a really fun conversation. But for those who don't know much about you or know who you are, can you give us a little intro on who is Roman and what you're working on?
So if you want me to take it all the way back, I was born in Lviv, Ukraine in 1984. I came to the United States when I was five. So I've been here since 1990. It was still the Soviet Union when I came over. And ever since then, I've been on the East Coast. I went to college for criminal justice and kind of got into digital marketing out of necessity. I graduated in 07, 08 when the economy kind of tanked. So there wasn't much in terms of funding on the local, state, or federal level for government roles, especially in criminal justice. So I kind of had the opportunity, you know, put in front of me and to pivot to digital marketing. I started in the digital marketing on my own, basically self-taught, got a lot of opportunities along the way, learned a lot, worked at a lot of agencies, and then basically founded my own as well.
Right. How long ago was it that you founded your own agency?
So I founded it in 2012, but it's been, you know, a work in progress as well. When I founded it, I was also working at another agency. And along the way, at times I have as well, in terms of supplementing that income and growing and gaining new experiences, because I started in the legal vertical and I wanted to branch out and get, you know, a different clientele. So I worked in pharma and life sciences, financial services, fitness, to kind of become a more well-rounded marketer.
Really interesting, because so my main gig right now is I'm a self-employed lawyer. So I'm definitely interested to hear a little bit about that and your experience marketing for them. But I want to go back to the point where you graduated around 07, 08, obviously not the most opportune time to go into the job marketplace. What was it that led to your pivot into digital marketing? Had you done any of it before? Were you reading about it while you were in school, or what led to that initially?
Not at all. I was kind of down. I was applying to a lot of jobs, and for months I couldn't, you know, land anything, going on a lot of interviews and just a lot of thank you. You know, we went with somebody else. And I had a friend I worked out with at the gym, so that was kind of my release, I guess. And he knew of my situation, so he said, listen, he owned a tax law, like finances, CPA firm, basically said, we need somebody to undertake digital marketing for us. He basically went to his car, got a packet, and said, take 1 to 2 months and learn this, and then, you know, read additionally on the internet, and basically we'll hire you and you jump into it. So I jumped into it. I was doing search engine optimization, local search, social media for them for about 2 months, and basically put my resume out there, and a company called LexisNexis basically picked me up, and I was there for 4 years after that.
That's so fun. These are all such familiar terms to me. LexisNexis, not necessarily in the best way, not that they're a bad company, but it just brings back memories of having to use it. When you say that he gave you a packet to study, what was in that packet?
So it was a printout of basically search engine optimization. So I think my core pillar in digital marketing is search engine optimization, and I spread out into different disciplines to become a more well-rounded digital marketer. But it was basically, you know, how to optimize a website in terms of on-site, off-site, technical, and some of the considerations that existed in 2009. It was more of the Wild West in terms of search engine optimization, and it was a lot easier to rank websites. But, you know, basic things like how to optimize titles and descriptions, internal linking, content strategy, that kind of thing.
Right. And so he was willing to kind of train you and let you work there short term. He was okay with that?
Well, it wasn't necessarily short term. It was basically, you know, undertake this for us. And if something happens to come up, an opportunity, you're more than welcome to take it. Because right. It was more so the pay wasn't anything comparable. It was mainly get the experience and get something legitimate on my resume so I can get a foot in the door.
Gotcha. So then take us to the next step. You are able to land a job at a digital marketing agency. And how did that go? Or sorry, you said at LexisNexis doing digital marketing?
Yeah. So basically, Lexis also does digital marketing for law firms, small, medium, and large size around the country. So they have a structure where it's like a digital agency within Lexis. So there's about 100 people. So web designers, web developers, copywriters, paid search specialists, social media specialists, search engine optimization specialists, and they have accounts where, you know, they'll build the website, optimize it, manage it, and basically undertake campaigns on behalf of the attorneys. So it's a setup where it's an agency kind of within LexisNexis catering to law firms.
Wow. I had no idea that existed. So what was that experience like? You get to the office, you have a little bit of this experience through your friend's firm, and what happens next?
Well, at first I was a contractor and I got hired full-time eventually, but I met the recruiter in the office and basically said, you know, they need people. So as long as you're enthusiastic and you say you're willing to learn, you mention some of the things you do and basically show that you're a team player, you're willing to learn and you're willing to kind of go above and beyond, most likely than not, they'll give you an opportunity. And that's what ended up happening.
Right. And was it an easy transition for you? I mean, you're still relatively new, it sounds like, at that point, to digital marketing. Was this something that came naturally to you, or was it just the sheer work and effort and like, were you putting in a ton of time?
Both. It came natural, but it also, I did a lot of stuff at home and on my own time, because at that point, you know, you get trained up and I started as a SEO analyst, so search engine optimization analyst. Mm-hmm. And eventually, you know, got a portfolio of clients. And when you get a portfolio of clients, you have a lot of websites to test strategies on, learn from. And that's exactly what ended up happening.
Gotcha. It sounds like another great opportunity to where you have a lot of resources in place to learn and to grow. And how long did you stay at the company for?
I was there for almost 4 years. And I ended up, when I left, I was senior SEO and social media strategist, basically managing elite portfolio. So those are clients that spend six figures or higher with the company, and as well as, you know, mentoring other employees that started before, you know, I ended up leaving as well.
Right. And so was this the only agency that you worked at before starting your own? I'm doing the math in my head. It sounds like it lines up.
Yeah, I actually started it while I was there. So it was one of the things. People ended up leaving and doing their own thing, going to other agencies. And then I saw, like, I'm no, you know, less smarter than they are. Why not me? So mm-hmm. basically I took the you know, legal route, setting up the LLC, building the website, starting to market and get the name out, and basically grow it alongside working there. So it was at times 60, 70 hours a week, mainly basically two full-time jobs.
Right, right. And I want to go back to a little bit before then, when before you pulled the plug or pulled the trigger, let's say, on the website and the LLC and everything, what was it like coming to the realization that, like you said, these other people were moving on and doing their own things? Basically, at what point did the entrepreneurial kind of light go off in your head, and how did you run with that?
Well, I think I always had it. Some of the stuff I did younger, I think it's kind of lines up to like the Gary Vee story. I came to America, right. I stayed in an apartment with seven other relatives. When I was in school, I used to kind of sell baseball cards, sell candy, you know, have my mom go to Costco, Sam's Club, buy a bag of candy for $10, end up flipping it for $40, that kind of stuff. So I always wanted to do my own thing and, like, you know, explore my ideas. And basically being there and seeing that it was very structured and very corporate and you can't do things out of the box, I wanted to be in control and, you know, guide my own strategies, guide my own campaigns, and basically help clients on a whole different level than I could have on a, you know, corporate structure where it's, you know, I'm not in control.
For sure. For sure. And what was it like when you decided to move forward? So you're still working at the company, you say, let's do this, or whatever you, you know, whatever the internal messaging was. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what was the conversation going on in your head? Were there doubts? Were you sure that this was the right thing? Were you confident in your decision?
I had a friend that kind of launched his agency at the same time. So I kind of did it alongside in a way and kind of went through some of the same pitfalls. But it was one of those things where it was either I do it or I don't. And I didn't want to be on a traditional kind of corporate ladder path because, you know, seeing how people were in that, some people that were in roles that they weren't qualified in, some people were in roles that they were overqualified in, and a lot of what you earned and what you did wasn't necessarily guided or lined up to your merit or what you had to offer in terms of a skill set.
Right. Yeah, that's just kind of inevitable in those situations. And you mentioned a bunch of pitfalls or some pitfalls. Can you talk a little bit about those, what they were, and how someone who might be starting now would be able to avoid them?
Well, it depends how you're looking. I think acquiring clients, if you're leaving a organization and you have a non-compete, a lot of the times if you decide to make a leap in terms of starting your own business, you take those clients along. I had a non-compete, which obviously I would have been sued if I took them along. So eventually I started reaching out to them and that kind of thing, and eventually networking and kind of building, you know, a reputation and, you know, getting work and accounts that way. But I think that and kind of getting and getting used to being told no. So in a corporate structure, you're not necessarily told no. You may, but it's not like, you know, kind of earth shattering or it doesn't upset you. When it's like your own baby and your own business and you're being told no over and over again, you have to kind of build the tolerance for it. It's one of those things where, you know, you experience pain throughout your life, and every time you experience it or whatever different experience, whether it be a loss or a breakup or, you know, a failed business, you learn from it and it makes you a little bit tougher. And I think one thing you have to develop very fast that I wish I had earlier is a very strong emotional IQ to deal with situations and deal with people that would probably streamline my path a lot smoother. Because back then, obviously, I was still in my 20s. Things may have bothered me a little bit differently than they do now, or some things that bothered me then may not now. So somebody winning an account over me, you know, that company doesn't know what they're doing, or that person just, you know, got it because they knew someone, and just being upset and that kind of thing. And I don't think that ever is a good thing or, you know, brings any kind of positivity to the situation.
Yeah, I can definitely agree. I think any entrepreneur would probably agree and relate to that, just being able to put up with the no's or stomach the downsides that are so inevitable no matter what industry you're in. And so I want to know, at what point did you decide to go full time? So quit Lexus, go full time on the agency. And then if you can talk a little bit about those first few months, what was it like? Were you still working by yourself? What were some of the struggles? And how was business going overall? That's a bit of a loaded question, so feel free to answer it as you may.
So after which, after Lexus, I still worked at a few agencies off and on in director roles and got a lot of experience. And there was a point where, you know, I got laid off from a agency, and that's when I basically was forced to go full time. And it really, you know, put into perspective how much work it takes and how much, you know, it takes overall to run something, especially on your own. So the agency structure of my agency is basically there's me and there's a handful of other people that are, you know, kind of foundations, and everyone else is a moving part. So I can scale up or scale down based on a project. So basically the relationships that I've made over time, there's people that do a lot of freelance work, and I, you know, I can back up their work based on their portfolio. So if there's a new account or a new campaign and I need 20 hours of, you know, design work, I can activate someone just, you know, instantaneously without any, you know, hiring process. So that is a luxury if you're in kind of the digital marketing space in terms of an agency, because some agencies basically hire a team, especially in the pharma life sciences field, which I have experience in. So they may get an account that's, you know, $50 million and activate a 30-person team. Well, if they lose that account, most likely than not, they don't repurpose that team. They basically lay the whole team off. So I'm in a position to basically avoid that. And, you know, there's a lot of work. There's plenty of work for people. If there's not as much work, there's no one getting fired or laid off. So,
right. That flexible kind of structure sounds like a good idea. What did your structure look like from the beginning, though? Was this an evolution? Did you have a few of those pieces in place that you were mentioning as part of your structure? I'm interested to know kind of what the first 6 to 12 months of your agency looked like.
I always had it. I think so. I was basically the building block, so basically involved in anything from sales to day-to-day to tactical planning to onboarding, that kind of stuff, and then tapping additional resources, at times outsourcing work, mainly in the United States, because if I promise work being done by someone, a professional in the United States, I'm not going to outsource it to the Philippines or Pakistan or India, which I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but that's a little not genuine, and a lot of agencies kind of do that in mass, that you're getting someone in the United States, but then you're paying someone, you know, 1/10 of, you know, what you're charging the actual client. So it was mainly me. It was mainly me networking and, you know, building relationships, people contacting me that I used to work with, and basically subcontracting work to myself and my agency on their behalf as part of their campaigns. Doing work for other agencies in terms of an agency may not have expertise in search engine optimization, going in either myself or having someone go in representing my agency and auditing their whole process, all their search engine optimization clients, retraining their employees, giving them suggestions in terms of how to better structure an offering, and basically doing additional work per case basis. So it depends also on what kind of business that was closed in terms of a contract that was long-term, month-to-month, straight, you know, consulting, anything else where it was, you know, some kind of discretionary fund where it's, you know, up to, you know, X amount of work a month and that rolls over. So it all depended on how a contract was structured.
Right. It sounds like you fit into that role that you created for yourself quite easily, but I'm going to guess that it was a little bit harder in practice in terms of how it played out at the beginning. Can you talk a little bit about some of the struggles that you went through, especially in that first year or two, And maybe if you could follow that up with what you would recommend for others who might be, you know, about to pull the trigger on a digital agency on their own, maybe like two or three suggestions on what you would do if you could do it again.
I would structure the business a little bit tighter and have a more concrete business plan. That doesn't mean, you know, it was bad or anything of that nature, but having something super structured, which you can still pivot away from, but kind of understanding the direction you're heading, because a lot of the time I would, you know, take a client that I may not necessarily would want to work with, or is ideally the goal to work with, you know, just to pay, you know, the bills or pay for certain systems and that kind of thing, but also break down kind of your growth and goals. So I guess if you're starting out right away, I would do probably like 6 months, 1 year, and then I would do it by every 6 month interval in terms of where do you want to end up. So scaling how much business you hope to have or attain, how much you're starting out with, or if you're starting from scratch, if you're growing, how are you, you know, how are you growing? Are you going to hire someone that's kind of like you, which is a day-to-day operations person, and then you're more, you know, top level, or you're hiring, you know, an HR person? I would say bring on people that can take things off of your plate that you may not need to worry about. If you're a founder, you should be worried about kind of keeping the company afloat and not necessarily concerned at times about, you know, a social media post that, you know, a client is really upset about, unless it's something where it's obviously going to lead to a lawsuit or the loss of a client or something serious like that. But just decluttering your time from all the little pieces and focusing on, you know, what's important on your level as a founder.
Right. Yeah. Those are all so important. And so what were some of the biggest struggles that you either faced at the beginning or continue to face, or even could be facing right now?
I would say, because I work with a lot of people and I talk to a lot of people and I network a lot, I think the integrity of people and where they, you know, want to be, describing the structure of, you know, activating, you know, 20 hours of a freelancer that, you know, works on my company's behalf or anything else. You have to trust the person and their quality of work and kind of the goals line up. And a lot of the time, over time, people get a little comfortable or complacent. The work may slip. So I think trusting internal and external employees and, you know, business relationships and things of that nature, because I get presented with, you know, partnership opportunities, different things all the time in terms of, you know, contributing here, contributing there, speaking and things of that nature. But a lot of the time it's one of those things where people ask and don't really give or meet halfway. So just, I think, trusting and vetting people around you as well and kind of eliminating the noise. I think I eliminated some people that may have not been the right fit over time from a business perspective, as well as people around me that may have been kind of negative or, you know, dragging my goals down from, you know, a business standpoint. So kind of try to phase them out of your life. Not to say that, you know, you have to get rid of them altogether, but if they're kind of dragging you down or, you know, putting a hurdle up in terms of what you're trying to achieve from a professional sense, then kind of distancing yourself and just doing what you need to do. A lot of the time you're by yourself and it gets a little lonely, like 2 a.m, 3 a.m, when, you know, you're reading emails, writing proposals, that kind of stuff. But I think seeing that vision and that end goal, which isn't necessarily a stationary point, you know, it's a journey where the journey itself is, you know, you're reaching your goals in each point that you get to. But I think overall gaining trust and understanding people.
For sure. And you've alluded to networking a few times now, and it sounds like it was a big part of, and still is a big part of your business, and is so important for, I would say, anyone who's looking to get started. Can you give a few tips or pieces of advice to those who might not even know where to start when it comes to networking or have any experience with it? And if you could, just explain a little bit of what exactly it is that you do for networking.
Yeah, so I think sometimes it's a little daunting where, you know, you get out and you have to, you know, kind of mingle with people. Depending on your personality, you may not like that setting. Mm-hmm. I honestly would prefer, you know, being in the gym by myself or being outdoors or playing a sport or more, you know, of an intimate setting than, you know, being thrown into complete strangers. But I think I had to adapt and I'm more comfortable with it, as well as speaking in front of the people and that kind of stuff. And that's developed over time. But the first starting point that, you know, I use to get into it is meetup.com and Eventbrite. So looking at local meetups and different networking groups in the area, usually on Meetup, they'll have their events or on Eventbrite. So if you're located, I don't know what state, let's pick, I'm in New Jersey. So I attend the New Jersey Communications and Marketing Association. A lot of their networking events are free. So you don't even have to be part of the, you know, organization to attend. There's NJ Ad Club I attend for specific, you know, like networking mixers, as well as getting experience. So I think the last thing I went to was $40 or $50, and it was an innovation summit where there was 6 sessions and basically 3 different modules. So, you know, there was like 3 hours of different intensive case studies and trainings where, you know, it's fairly cost effective, where you would probably usually pay a few hundred dollars to do so. Other things, looking on LinkedIn, looking for, you know, things around me, even Google networking events near me, as simple as that. Mm-hmm. Facebook events, searching through them as well. Last year, I actually kind of accelerated my networking and meeting people. So I made it a goal to go to at least one networking event a month. Then I transitioned to 2, and then threw in possibly speak at one every few months. And then you have to just be repetitive with it and then get to a point. And then also kind of meeting the people that I wanted to meet. So last year I got to meet Gary Vaynerchuk. I got to meet Max Levchin, co-founder of PayPal. I got to meet Gerard Adams, and just looking for opportunities. And all of those opportunities were basically free. Max Levchin, he launched his, he has a startup in the financial space. He launched a East Coast office in New York City, and basically it happened to pop up as an ad on LinkedIn that there's a, you know, office launch, and it was totally free. I ended up signing up. He spoke, and it's something that probably would have been a closed event otherwise.
Right. Yeah, that's some great advice, and I second the recommendations for Meetup and Eventbrite. I'm up in Canada, in Toronto, and that's usually the first place I check as well. There's some really cool opportunities that you wouldn't find otherwise. That's really great, Roman. So I want to spend a little bit of time, because you are so experienced in digital marketing, to share a little bit of insight for our listeners who may be starting up something that isn't a digital marketing agency, but obviously digital marketing is so entrenched in business these days that even if you don't offer digital marketing services, you probably need to include it in some form in your business. I'm going to start a little bit broad here, but are there any recommendations you have in general for someone starting out in general? Let's just say, you know, they're starting a blog, or they want to be a coach, you know, like some of the quote unquote popular choices out there. Any common mistakes or suggestions that you notice yourself giving to entrepreneurs over and over again?
I think trying something and not just canceling it out without giving it a chance. I think the easiest thing you can really do is piggyback off somebody else's audience. So if you are starting a blog, I would suggest whatever the space, if it's something general, if it's something specific, let's say sailing, look at, you know, just simply Google top, you know, sailing blogs, top 50 sailing blogs. Go through each individual one and see if there's people that are contributors or write that aren't part of that company or that community. If that's the case, then they accept content from outside authors. If that is the case, then you can reach out, do a, you know, kind of outreach campaign per se, and basically write a email. The email should be unique to that specific company and offer something of value, because if you copy and paste the same email, eventually the people receiving that email are going to catch on. Right. And a lot of the time I've had issues where it's somebody emails me a copy and pasted email and don't bother changing the name. So that could be a problem also. Right. But, you know, you make a list of the top 50, 100 blogs. It doesn't have to be even 100. You can be local and basically go through email that, you know, your up and coming blog, you're a sailing enthusiast and, you know, you want to share your knowledge and share your passion, and basically go through the content of that blog or publication and see if there's any gaps. If you can offer value, you're more likely to get featured, maybe even become a, you know, ongoing author there, and then get opportunities to link back to your blog or your website and basically piggyback on their traffic. So sending their community to yours, because you're starting from scratch. You need every kind of asset and, you know, win that you can.
Right. Yeah, that's a great strategy. I'm going to selfishly ask, what if you have a relatively, although I think I'm proud to say that my podcast isn't so new anymore, but for people trying to break into podcasting, since you have some experience there, any tips for that domain?
I would just say build the podcast brand. So create all your social channels. I would probably have Twitter and Instagram on top, and depends what the category is. If it's something super, you know, entertainment, I would recommend starting a Instagram account, maybe a Snapchat or anything of that nature, where the demo is a little younger and it's a little flashier and visual. If it's something B2B related, you should definitely focus and create a company page for the podcast on LinkedIn and promote them that way. Then you should start creating content. So if you're done with an episode, create, you know, a skin. If you have a person you interview, ask for their headshot, take their headshot, put it kind of on your podcast background, have a still static image. And then also I basically create a audio overlay, which is a clip of that episode with captions, and then post that as well and linking to the podcast to kind of gain momentum that way. Obviously the podcast is syndicated, so you have, you know, all the channels that it goes to, and then there's free websites like whatpods.com that you can basically endorse an episode and upvote it, where people go and discover new podcasts as well and cross promote your podcast. So go on other podcasts to become, you know, a guest, talk about your podcast, add value to other people and other communities as well.
Right. What was that website that you'd mentioned?
It's called WhatPods, WhatPods.
Man, I'm going to have to look that up after. Really, really cool. And Roman, what about SEO specifically? Could you give like a really quick crash course? Basically, I want to call it SEO for dummies. Like, let's say I have a blog and I'm not super technologically savvy, and I probably can't invest, let's say, in services like yours, but I do want to be a little cognizant of it. Any intro tips or starters, places or resources that you suggest?
Yeah, usually you should have your blog on something like WordPress. If you have it on something like Wix or a content management system like that, they're not as SEO friendly. And before Wix sites, if you look at a Wix site, the whole site showed up as one page within a search result, which obviously doesn't leave real estate for search engine optimization, because with search engine optimization, you need content and places to land and specific kind of themes in terms of pages, or obviously if you have blog posts, your blog posts are about different topics, and each blog post that focuses on a topic has a possibility for showing up for variations of that topic. If your blog is on WordPress, you can install SEO related plugins. Usually industry standard are Yoast and All-in-One SEO that basically, you know, drills it down to a dummy level. They're kind of the standard anyway, but if you don't have them, you have to go through and hard code everything like meta titles and meta descriptions. But with that, you have components of, you know, on-site and technical SEO. So stuff like no indexing and no following, specific pages, crawlability. You can set, like I said, per page, you have the accessibility. When you activate the plugin, you can just do the meta titles and meta descriptions within that specific page. Other things are, if you do some keyword research, you should do some keyword and theme research, what people are actually looking for. An easy way, if you don't have a tool, is basically start typing what, you know, you plan to write on, or just do a search. And then anything, if you are using Google, anything that shows up on the bottom as suggested, or if you're typing and you have other things that pop up within that, that basically shows that those are some of the things that are being searched for that actually are important and have search volume. Right. If you do things like paid search and you have Google Ads and you've ran a campaign before, you have access to Google Keyword Planner. You can utilize that to do organic research. So things like, you know, classic cars, you put it in, and if you do find related keywords or related research, it's going to populate anything really related to it in the search volume and the difficulty to it. There's things like free tools like Uber Suggest that do a fraction of that in terms of keyword research as well. I would recommend not focusing on keywords, but looking at themes as well, thematic relationships. There is a component called RankBrain to Google that's more of its AI machine learning. So Google tries to personalize results as well. So tailoring the content to your community and adding value. If you are doing a content strategy, a simple thing to do is whatever your space is, do a search and see what, you know, the top five websites are that are direct competitors. Because in certain industries, like legal, if you are a law firm, a lot of the times the first page organically, you'll have Fine Law or LexisNexis show up. You're not really competing with them. You're competing with the other law firms. So look at the result that's related to your business that lines up in terms of competitor and see what the content looks like on that page. See what the specific topics within that theme are and see what, you know, the content length, what are they linking to? What is the title? What is the description? And I'm saying copy it word for word, but it can give you direction on what are some of the things that people are going to their website or their page for, and basically understand that and understand need. Because you can still rank for a specific page, but not deliver much value, and eventually that page is going to drop off because it's not presenting the best experience in the search result. And, you know, at the end right. of the day, Google tries to give as many results on the first page that add as much value, and the person gets to that website and gets what they need. If you aren't, over time, you will start dropping off because people start dropping off your site and the bounce rate is so high that it's not, you know, anything that it's a great user experience.
Gotcha. That's a lot of great advice packed into one answer. Roman, really appreciate all this insight. I have one more question for you, and it relates kind of going back to the beginning of your story and all of our stories. Is if there's someone out there who has that entrepreneurial bug, they want to do something, they want to go out on their own, what two or three pieces of advice would you give to them?
I would say do as much research as possible. I mean, it's 2019. You can find anything on the internet. You can find, you know, courses from Harvard that are being taught now that they're open source, so you can learn something on your own. If you're going to do it, get as much information about it, learn the space. If you're going to be a local or regional agency or any type of business, understand your competitors, understand what your competitors are doing in terms of the clients that they're targeting, the offerings that they have. If there's something where you can fill a void or, you know, present a differentiator to potential clients, that actually adds a lot of value. Something that I should have done earlier is find a mentor. So I'm not saying somebody that's, you know, a multimillionaire right now. It could be somebody that just started an agency just, you know, a year or two ago, understanding what they dealt with, like we spoke about initially, or somebody where if you have a, you know, a 5-year, 10-year plan, somebody that's at that 5-year plan, at that 10-year plan, and basically have them, you know, it doesn't have to be like, you know, you have to mentor me or whatever. Simply, you know, reach out to them, maybe have a correspondence over the phone, anything, you know, that you can get in terms of insight. I would say don't approach that as just an ask. If you have a particular person in mind and if you see they're interested in something or, you know, they have a hobby, possibly add some value to them. If they like, I don't know, the Mets, maybe take them out to a Mets game. And at that point, you have 2-3 hours to pick their brain. So right. Add value, add something where they're willing to say yes. Because, I mean, if you approach somebody successful, their time is important. Everyone's time is important. But if you say, hey, I'm just starting out, I need a mentor, it's one of those things, okay, what are you adding? Where are you at? You know, I think half of the battle is the ask and what you're actually giving in return as well. And I think the third thing is have some kind of plan established. If you're just, let's start this without anything, having a business plan, understanding how you would like to scale, understanding the systems that you would need and the tools and how much they cost and things of that nature, and prioritizing your time as well, because you can lose track of time and go in different directions and, you know, end up multitasking, but not really doing too many things, but not doing them well.
Right. Yeah, that's some really great actionable stuff. Roman, thanks so much for coming on the show. Can take a second and tell us a little bit more about the company or links where people can find you, where people can find the agency if they want to learn more.
Yeah, the agency is novazoradigital.com. You can find myself or the agency anywhere, you know, on the internet in terms of audio content, written content, video content. The podcast is The Digital Savage Experience that focuses on digital marketing, tech, motivation, and family. And I work with a company directly called Cubic Consulting as well. They focus on demand planning, financial planning, predictive analytics for large-sized businesses. So if you are in that B2B space and you need a business analytics solution or need help with that, they're always happy to help as well.
Awesome. Roman, thanks again for taking the time to chat today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Hey everyone, Josh here, checking in just one last time. Wanted to say thanks so much for listening to the podcast episode. I hope you got a ton of value out of it. And if you want to keep getting more of the Solopreneur Grind content, make sure to join the email list. What I do is send 3 emails a week with additional content such as what's going on in the background of my solopreneur journey, insights I'm having on business, and updates when new podcast episodes like these come out as well. It's free. It always will be. The link to join is in the description of whatever podcast platform you're listening this to on. Really hope to have you on the list and continuing to share these awesome solopreneur journeys and insights with you as well. Have a great day and hope to see you soon.